Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. I'm getting an echo. It is Saturday, the 7th day of June, Anno Domini 2025, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to change, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Have you paid your dues? Before we get to the news, I want to acknowledge Dennis Worcester, who took time off from his busy Saturday to come in and join us here and in the general mayhem. Apparently, Steve is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest.
Again,
yep.
And Dennis was kind enough to step in.
We taught him this time he's not supposed to high-five the cactus.
Hopefully he'll learn.
You think you taught him.
Yeah, yeah, they're all standing there with those cacti, or just standing out there with their limbs.
Like this.
Yeah.
Thinks he won't be noticed.
If you're too overtired, or if you're just undernourished or whatever, if you're on the run, you know, there's a lot of anxiety there. And every once in a while, you think somebody's on your side, and you look out into the distance, and you just want that support.
Just waiting for that high five.
Just waiting for that high five. Seems like it's such a great idea until
you've done it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you say, oh.
Have you ever actually had a cactus needle?
I have not.
Oh, I have. Holy mother of pearl.
They hurt.
I only got up close to a cactus about a year ago. Well, a little bit more. And we were out in the Phoenix area and driving around.
That's where I got mine.
And they've got them. You know,
they grow them like crazy.
As a lifelong resident of the Northeast, I have not spent a lot of time around cacti. And it was still a very novel experience to me to be able to see what looks like almost an entire forest of them out there. And it's
there is a kind of a cactus-like museum or botanical garden thing.
Yep. Yes.
That you can go to that has every type of cacti.
The flowering cactus right on down to
barrel cactus.
The ones that you can get water out of.
So we went to the Saguaro National Park to check that out, and it was fabulous and interesting, and I had no idea, you know, this is what our callers tune in for. It's the hot cactus talk that we have going on. But there's like a whole wooden skeleton on the inside of them.
That keeps
them up and running and doing all the stuff. And it's like, no, their skin, their what we think of as bark, that's their leaf. And that's how they transpire and do all the things that they need to do regarding photosynthesis. And just incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing.
A whole different planet down there.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, we hope Steve is enjoying his time away.
Yeah, and not getting any cacti needles.
No, not getting picked up by the fuzz.
Ba-dum-bum. Thank you. He'll be here all week. Try the veal. All right, I hope you're all sitting down. Microsoft has a serious Windows upgrade problem.
What?
Unbelievable.
This doesn't sound like the Microsoft I know.
Well, it is. With October's deadline closing in, which, as you might remember, is when Windows 10 goes
poof
dead, and you will never get another update.
You can run it. You just won't get security updates. Right. You shouldn't, but you can.
You definitely shouldn't. With October's deadline closing in, 50% of all Windows users must upgrade to Windows 11 or buy new PCs if current ones are ineligible before security updates end. While steady month-on-month progress was being made, that has just changed. Upgrades have gone into reverse. This setback comes just after a new warning for Windows 10 users whose PCs have been described as magnets for security threats. You can expect many more such warnings as 500 million of those Windows users face an increasingly urgent decision. The latest warning comes courtesy of PC maker Asus, the people who made my laptop. If you're still using Windows 10, or dare we say it's something even older, your computer's days of regular updates and support are numbered. Of course, most of the computer manufacturers are trying to push the higher-end, more premium PCs that will run Copilot, but you don't have to. Upgrading Windows is a must, but Copilot isn't. AI PCs remain a niche despite projections that they will inevitably dominate new PC sales. With just over 5 months to run until free Windows 10 security updates end for all users, it's still looking pretty bleak with about half of all PCs still not upgraded. Paid extensions are available, but they're expensive for enterprises and restricted to just 12 months for home users. Microsoft is pushing free upgrades, not paid extensions, unbelievably. Even in the U.S., where Windows 11 has overtaken Windows 10, May's data suggests Windows 10 has grown its share by 3%. I don't even know how it does that. While Windows 11 dropped a more worrying 3.5%. If Microsoft is to avoid a cybersecurity, and more importantly for them, a PR nightmare, hitting mid-October, something needs to change. For all those Windows 10 users with PCs eligible for a free upgrade, do not run out of time. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is why haven't you upgraded to Windows 11? Your choices are, I have. I'm going to, don't rush me. My PC's too old. I'm too old. It won't run on my Mac. And Linux forever, baby. So far, we have 26 votes. My PC's too old is tied with Linux forever, baby, in the lead.
Yeah, it's tough, though, right now.
It's tough right now. Before we get into that, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, they've made it impossible. I mean, or nearly impossible with the rising prices going on right now, the tariffs,
yeah,
which, you know, most of the parts and components are coming from, China. And the expense of getting a new computer, glad I wound up going on Woot.
Yep.
And got my latest one, and that was a great deal. I mean, I paid, it's a desktop, small tower, it was only $320.
Yep.
It was used. I'm fine with that. And yep. It's, you know, a hell of
pre-owned, refurbs. You know, refurb. There's a lot of ways to do that.
Refurbed, Woot sells refurb. I bought I don't remember how many I sent to Tanzania. I bought a dozen easy laptops and desktops.
It came with Windows 11, but a lot of the newer, you know, people that are out there with the Windows 10, a lot of the machines just won't run Windows 11.
No, I get that.
11.
Yeah, no, it's true. Especially for people that are price sensitive, we'll say.
Yeah.
And, hey, everybody likes to save a few dollars when you can. Why not?
Yeah, right now?
Absolutely.
So what I tell people is hit up Facebook Marketplace, hit up your favorite auction site, check into local companies that refurb computers or that collect cast-off computers from companies. Some companies only lease their machines. Some companies buy them and only keep them for a certain number of years before they turn them around.
Mm-hmm.
And there can be a secondary market where the prices are going to be a lot less. And those devices were shipped over to the United States before tariffs took effect. So they're not likely to be – I mean, tariffs will affect all the prices of everything, of course. But it's still possible to find a deal or to negotiate a bit or to trade with someone. Or there are ways to get around this. If you really want to be on the latest and keep getting your security updates, which you should.
Which you better.
There are ways to find your next machine and not have to do that from a...
Or while you still have the time. I mean, we still got some months.
Right.
True. That older computer that's sitting around is the perfect one to grab Linux, load it up with Linux between now and October, and practice playing around with this Linux on this older machine. You've still got your old, you know, the Windows 10 that's chugging along right now until October to get it. But this older computer, you can make the mistakes and maybe, you know, delete this or whatever. It doesn't matter because it's not your main computer. Get the practice of using Linux on this older machine so that before October, you can move over to Linux on your current Windows 10 machine and not have to worry about updates.
Right. Or make that Linux machine the one that you use to get your email, to go to check your bank balance, to go to do your taxes.
Yeah.
And that one's always getting the updates.
And one thing I hear way too regularly is, I can't use Linux because I don't know the command line. Okay, two things.
Good news.
Yeah, two things. The first thing is, the most important thing is, you don't ever have to use the command line.
Yeah, that's optional.
Every version of Linux now has a graphical user interface, or GUI as they call it. And really, you can play with 50 of them if you want to. I mean, there's like 1,000 different front ends to Linux. Most people go with GNOME or KDE or XFCE. Linux Mint. Those are among the big ones. But you can just play with one. Just load one up. Everything that you can do in a Windows window, that's clumsy, but
yeah.
I'm not. Mm-hmm. I didn't name it. And if everything you do in a Windows window, you can do in a Linux window. So if you drag and drop files on Windows, you can drag and drop files on Linux.
If you double-click to launch an application,
you do it on Linux. That.
If you hit the little red X, the little X in the corner of the window to close the window,
it will close the window.
It'll do the same.
It's exactly the same. You know all of this.
You know more than you think you might.
Yeah. And so, playing with Linux. Now, I will admit that I have... very close to the top of my to-do list, which means I'll get to it sometime before the millennium. I have create a course on the Linux command line.
Okay.
And I don't know if I want to offer it as a course on Mastermind Lounge or as a book.
Or both.
Well, I could do both. There's really no reason I couldn't do both. And that might be fun. That might be a more interesting way to do things. But what you would find, but it's kind of a cheat. I mean, the command line is the command line. You can, you have the CD command in Windows. You have the CD command in Linux.
Sure.
You have the dir command in Windows. You have the ls command in Linux.
Yep.
You just need to know what the equivalent is.
Yeah.
And what you're looking at. So there's no magic there. Unless you use the rm command wrongly, which is the remove command, you can't damage your machine beyond repair, and you can hardly damage it at all.
Well, if they had the book, though, then they can always go back as a reference.
That would
be strong, being able to sit there and watch videos, but also have the book to reference as far as the commands and how to type them, or select them and copy them and paste and do that type of stuff, because a lot of the videos will also have instructions which you can sit there and copy and paste. And but if you had the book to show you how to do that type of stuff, that might be very beneficial.
Well, we'll see.
If, yeah,
I don't know.
I'd start there first, and then if that takes off, instructional video.
When you do your books, tell me about your publishing process. So you have an idea for a book.
Yes.
You write it out. I'm going to guess, because of what I know about you, that you're doing this in Google Docs. Yes?
Ding, 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 ding. We have a winner, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay. And so you've written it. You've figured out your chapters. You've made a table of contents, maybe an index. I don't know. All right. So what happens next?
Depends on where I'm going to publish it. Generally speaking, it's Amazon.
Okay.
In which case, you download either a Microsoft Word file.
Okay.
Which you can do just by file, download Microsoft Word.
Sure. From. Google Docs knows how to impersonate Word files.
Exactly. And then I can put it into the Kindle Creator.
Okay.
If I want to. Or I can just... depending on how good I think it is, how ready I think it is, I can just upload it to Amazon, upload a cover, set a price.
And now you've got a product that's
tell
for
them,
sale.
Tell them it's an ebook, for example.
Sure.
I've sold all my other books on yourguruguides.com.
Okay.
And they're kind of old, though. Some of them are a little out of date at this point.
Well, technology is like that.
Exactly right. But then you're done. and then, you know, you rake in the bucks.
Oh, both
Step
of them.
Three, profit.
Yeah, yeah, right. Then it's just about promotion.
And then it's just about promotion. And it really is. Okay, so I was about to say it's really easy to publish a book, and it is. It is harder to publish a good book.
Right.
I was, for a number of years, a person who wrote and or vetted educational books.
Okay.
So I know what not to put in a book and what to put in a book and how to write it and how to set it up.
What voice, what tone.
What tone, all of that stuff.
Examples.
Anybody can write a book.
Yeah.
It's harder to write a good book. And it's not that you can't write a good book. But you write the book, then you edit the book.
Right.
And that's where most people fall down.
Yeah. I've read a few books that you could tell, even the ones that were in print, where it's allegedly by this, you know, guru in business. And you could tell pretty quickly that it was really just the guy sat in a chair and either talked to somebody and they recorded it, because it was written verbatim how somebody spoke.
Yep.
And the way people speak is not the way people write.
It's not the way people write. And the other problem is people fall in love with their words.
Sure.
You put some words on a page and you think,
and they're precious.
Holy mother of pearl, that is brilliant.
Yes.
Mostly it is not.
Yeah.
You can massage it to be good.
Right.
And if you're Steinbeck or Hemingway, you can approach brilliant. But you have to edit it. You have to make it. You have to massage it.
Well, and it needs to say what you intended to say.
Right.
Because people only can read the words that you actually put on the page. They
right.
can't read your mind and the state that it was in when you yeah. put those words on.
I don't know what you meant.
Yes.
You have to tell me.
Right. I read what you wrote, but I don't think I understand what you meant.
Right. And how many times has somebody said
aligns
you,
those.
Oh, I skipped that step. You have to do this too.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
No.
It's too late.
Yes. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Jim from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Jim?
Well, I have an HP laptop.
Okay.
And recently, when I'm using PowerPoint, the thing quits. It just shuts right down. And then depending on what it happens, sometimes I get boot drive not found. Please install an operating system on your hard drive. And sometimes I get prepared an automatic repair, which nothing happens.
Sounds,
and then your device has run into a problem, and we will restart it now.
It sounds like you've got a hard drive that's going south on you, and it's giving you the warnings.
Okay.
I hope you have backups.
Yes, I'm doing that right now.
Yeah, good.
Good.
Because it sounds, just from the hiccups, you were saying that it's having the boot sector. It's definitely the hard drive that it's causing issues in writing the boot sector when it exits out, or, you know, just searching for stuff and everything else.
I would get that hard drive replaced immediately.
How old is the machine?
It's not that old, just a couple of, probably about 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Some of them are dead out of the box. So, yeah I would suggest that you make sure you have more than one backup. And then get that drive replaced as soon as possible.
Okay, so what about just buying a new computer?
Yes, you can absolutely do that. That would be the next step. And get something that's at least as fast, at least as much RAM, and at least as much hard drive as you have now.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I mean, how... Since this has happened sporadically, am I going to have time to do all this backup?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Seriously, it's like you're playing Russian roulette right now.
I can answer it this way. If you were at the hospital with somebody you cared about and they were on life support and you were asking them about their life story so you could write it down, how would you be able to finish that?
Yeah.
And you're in kind of a... risky predicament right now.
The best thing you can do right now is, while it is still running, make backups.
Okay.
And notice the S on the end of that, backups. Make more than one backup.
Okay.
And focus on your documents and your photos.
Those are the important things.
And any bank, if use a banking program, back that up. Anything that's important to you, that don't worry about backing up the programs, because those you're going to have to reinstall no matter what computer you get.
Right.
It's the data. Only focus on the data, your documents, your photos, and anything that's vitally important to you.
One of the things I always have problems with is I don't know all the things that should be backed up. There might be things that should be backed up that I don't even know about.
Well, here's the thing. Are you using what's the finance program you don't like anymore?
Quicken.
Are you using Quicken?
Yes.
Okay, that may have its own folder where it keeps its data.
It does. And it, as a matter of fact, in the program, you can check in the backup. It'll tell you where it's saving the backup file.
Yeah, well, I just did that. I backed that up to external hard drives.
Perfect.
Already.
Yep.
Everything else should be in the documents folder. Unless you have changed it, or unless you're running some really odd program.
Okay, it should be in the documents folder.
Mm-hmm. Right, so under, it should be, under my...
Yeah, my documents.
My documents. Or, of course, my photos, my music. Right, so it's those things that you have to back up. And wherever Quicken kept its files. Everything else is the data for... is the programs and stuff that you're going to have to reinstall anyway.
So I do a lot of programs using PowerPoint, and I load them into a file on my desktop. So I've got to do that. I've got to do that in the
desktop as well. Yes. Anything you leave on the desktop, yes.
Okay. Okay. No. Well, thanks for scaring the hell out of me.
Good.
No, you need to. You need to be worried about it.
But the good news is you're moving in the right direction. You're doing all the right things.
Yep.
Oh, okay, so it's definitely gone.
It's good. The
good news is...
giving you fair warning.
Lay drive a mort.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, Doug. Thanks a lot.
All right. Good luck. Yeah. If you find yourself getting those kinds of messages, boot drive not found, automatic repair initiated, those kind of things... Yeah, it's time for replacing that drive or the whole machine, as Jim said. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco. I will have time to put new teeth in, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a few.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. I knew that came as a shock to some of you.
Still.
Okay, security news. The U.S. Department of State has announced a reward of up to $10 million. For any information on government-sponsored hackers with ties to the Redline InfoStealer malware operation and its suspected creator, Russian national Maxim Alexandrovich Rudomitov.
Whatever.
Maxim.
Yeah.
The same bounty covers leads on state hackers' use of this malware in cyber operations targeting critical infrastructure organizations in the United States. This bounty is posted as part of the Department of State's Rewards for Justice program, established by the 1984 Act to Combat International Terrorism, which rewards informants for tips that help identify or locate foreign government threat actors behind cyber attacks against U.S. entities. Since its inception, over $250 million has been paid through this program to more than 125 individuals who provided leads that helped protect U.S. national security. The Ukrainian police arrested a 35-year-old hacker who breached 5,000 accounts at an international hosting company and used them to mine cryptocurrency, resulting in $4.5 million in damages. After gaining access to these accounts, the perpetrator began unauthorized deployment of virtual machines to do the mining using the company's server resources. Mozilla has developed a new security feature for its add-on portal that helps block Firefox malicious extensions that drain cryptocurrency wallets. According to a recent blog post, Mozilla's new security system creates risk profiles for each submitted wallet extension and triggers automated risk alerts if a predefined threshold is exceeded. These alerts will prompt human reviewers to take a closer look and remove malicious extensions from the store before they're used to drain more victims' crypto wallets. Meta and search engine company Yandex have allegedly been covertly tracking Android users in the background of their devices, tracking Android users' browser activity without their consent, and then using the data in their own apps.
This is Meta, you're saying?
Meta and Yandex, yeah.
Wow.
Meta said it is looking into the issue.
Are they?
Yeah, really.
Looking into the issue.
As they smile, yeah.
Yeah, while Yandex denied collecting any sensitive data. Notice Meta did not deny.
No.
No.
Okay. The scripts bypassed Android security measures and meant that Meta and Yandex could track what users were doing on web browsers without the user's consent or even knowing. The apps were able to track users' browser data on all major Android browsers, even if the user was in incognito mode. The apps in question are Facebook, Instagram,
I've heard of those,
and Yandex Maps. Google, who owns the Android operating system, confirmed the covert activity. It said Meta and Yandex used Android's capabilities in unintended ways that blatantly violate our security and privacy principles. Are you using Facebook or Instagram on your phone? Stop immediately. Then give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Yeah. I've been saying for years, don't put Facebook or Instagram on your phone. Just don't do it. Because clearly, Meta is not a company that you want to trust ever for anything, ever.
No. Well, you're the product.
Exactly right.
Yep.
You know. So I am proud to say that neither Facebook nor Instagram has ever been on my phone, ever. When I run Facebook, I run it in a browser that I use for nothing else.
Okay.
A different browser, like it's Firefox and Google Chrome and
I use DuckDuckGo.
DuckDuckGo and there's a bunch of different browsers, right?
Right.
So I use one that I never use for anything else.
Okay.
And in the extensions, there is a thing called Facebook Fence.
Oh, okay. What does that
do? And Facebook Fence kills all those trackers that Facebook lays into your system
to
follow everything you're doing.
Yeah, because you could go look for, say, vitamins. And then within 5 minutes, all of a sudden you're getting all these...
Facebook ads
saying, well, oh, here's one about this, and here's about that, and you just get inundated with it.
Right. Yep. Well, the people that are paying are the people that want those ads to go in front of people who are thinking and talking about vitamins.
Yes.
Right? So it all makes sense. It's follow the money, right? Completely understandable.
Well, and you were saying just a few minutes ago, I was talking about writing a book, and you said, and then you have to promote it.
Yeah.
And where's one of the best places to promote things these days? Facebook.
Sure. A lot of people.
And I get it. I do get it.
Right.
And I'm as happy to put an ad on Facebook as anybody else. But on the other side, and I realize how hypocritical this all sounds, on the other side, I don't want to be tracked.
Mm-hmm.
What's the answer? We don't have one yet.
Yeah.
How do I say, as a producer of something, as a seller of something, I want to be able to sell this book to everybody who is interested in Linux. That's my demographic.
Sure.
I don't care about their age. I don't care about their gender. I don't care about anything. If they're interested in Linux, I want to promote this book to them.
Right.
How do you get that information? You have to, and I hate to use the word, spy on them.
Well, you have to put the offer in front of people, right? And the question becomes, how do you identify those people that you're going to put the offer in front of?
Exactly.
So there are people believe it or not, listeners, that are Nick Francesco fans.
What? You
know, they've been following your work for decades, and they know and trust you and love you and want to know what you're up to. And when you find something that's interesting and you want to teach other people about it, and they know that that's something they're interested in too, and they like the way you communicate, they like the way you describe things, they're ready to make that exchange. They've said, oh, I'll give you a little bit of money, you give me this book, and we're both happy. So the trick is, how do you get those people to tell other people about you, or how do you grow your audience?
Exactly.
And part of that is by building your reputation over time, and part of that is by putting yourself out there, you know, and being on the web, being in print for many, many, many years, being on the radio.
Yeah, but I was going to say, it's like us on the radio.
Right.
You know, when we first started out, compared to what we have now after 35 years,
right.
You know, an audience that has followed us from one station to the other to now here, that's pretty good loyalty right there.
And there's no question to that, but the reality is, one ad on Facebook hits 50,000 times more people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yeah. No
so
doubt.
So I think the problem is that people get concerned if they're just, if I'm posting on Facebook, oh boy, I'm about to go have a hot fudge sundae.
Yes.
You know, and I post a picture of myself eating an ice cream cone, and then it's not that I was searching for sundae spoons or sundae dishes.
Right.
Or you know, hot fudge providers or whatever.
Or ice cream suppliers.
Right. Or recipes for ice cream. Mm-hmm. I'm not searching for those things. I'm simply declaring that I'm about to do something. And then the platform says, oh, this is somebody who's into hot fudge sundaes. Let's show them these things. And, there's a difference between me searching for it and actively choosing to draw that information towards me versus other people listening in, essentially, on my declarations and then presuming, oh, hey, you know, if you like ice cream, you might be into this sort of thing. I'd be like, no, go away, shut up.
Right.
Stop
right,
talking
right,
to me.
Right.
Leave me alone.
That's the distinction.
I get these, we found something you might like.
Of course.
They're always either something I already searched for.
Sure.
Or my own books.
Yeah. Hey, you know what?
But you're right. I would be interested in
I know a guy named... you're so interested, in fact.
That I actually wrote it.
But the other side, too, is once you purchase something...
Yes, right.
There's no way to turn those stupid ads off because it's like, I already have the GD product. Leave me alone.
Right. When I bought a new faucet for the bathroom.
Yes. Or worse, for me, I had a friend call me up and said, I'm looking for a little mini fridge.
Sure.
He's in the situation many of us are at our age. My wife just had surgery. She's in bed.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I want to put a little mini fridge so she can have cold water.
Sure.
I went on Amazon. I searched mini fridges. I sent him two or three links.
Okay.
I said, these look like good ones to me.
Yep.
I've gotten four emails already, and was just, the whole thing was this week.
Yeah.
Four emails already. We found something you might like on the web.
Yeah.
Yes, this is exactly what I searched 4 days ago.
Yes, four days ago. Congratulations.
Exactly.
Welcome to 4 days ago.
You're right.
Time machine.
Right. But it wasn't me who was interested in those.
Right.
It doesn't care.
In fact.
No.
Right.
That system's not quite smart enough to handle that.
But that's really, if you are buying a Facebook ad, what you're paying for is that database of demographics.
Yeah.
And I do get that.
A target market.
And I do appreciate that. It's certainly more cost effective.
Yeah.
You get more bang for the buck to buy an ad on Facebook if you know how to narrow your parameters.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So I'm looking for males between 35 and 45. It doesn't really narrow it down much.
There's a lot of those on Facebook.
But I'm looking for males between 35 and 45 who ride more than 6 miles a day.
Sure.
And are looking at new bikes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a much smaller demographic. And, in fact, has narrowed it down to the point where I might sell a bike.
Sure.
Right? So you might see that ad.
Yeah, but you probably wouldn't.
But I wouldn't.
Right.
So, and that is worth money.
Yeah.
To an advertiser, and I get that.
Oh, yeah. Well, the total people, a targeted market, getting your message in front of a targeted market, and again, the technology group that is tuned into this, you know, again, comes for our hot online business marketing talk. You know, now that we're done talking about cacti, we've moved on, you folks. Yes.
Yeah, so, you people please, are getting, call getting us, it all today.
Call us and ask a question, please.
Right. Oh, I did get one. Talk about, you know, marketing and all that. I got one from Microsoft.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
It was on the OneDrive.
Yes.
This notice that says, well, because you deleted an inactivity of OneDrive on your machine, we're going to be forced to close down your account.
Oh, no.
I sat there and go, yay! Exactly. Because I sat there.
Don't threaten him with a good time.
That's one thing I've never used.
Yep.
And I went in with Revo Uninstaller.
Yep.
And Revo Uninstaller let me get rid of that GD product.
Yep.
And, yeah, I kept getting those, well, you know, your data's going to be lost in that. No, it's not. I'm backing it up elsewhere. I just don't want your stupid product.
Right.
And then be charged for all these notices that, oh, you're running out of space. You're running out of space.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. Mm-mm.
No, you're not. Yeah, and that's the kind of thing that, and yes, when I write a book, I want it to hit as big an audience as possible.
Yep. Yeah, sure.
But
a qualified audience, is more valuable.
And that's what Facebook does. But what I don't like about it is what we were just talking about, which is that I don't get a choice. If I put Facebook on my phone,
yeah,
it will track me no matter what.
Right.
And it should not do that.
And it's beyond the things that you are actively putting into their system. It's just you existing.
Right. It's spying on me.
Right. There's a difference.
And I do not like that. And I hope that they get dinged severely for that. Because that's not right. That's not right. So, there's a whole lot of nuance to marketing. And if you're the sort of person who wants to get that stuff, and there are people who love it, there are people who take every survey they get, there are people who look at ads, are happy to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
God bless you. Keep using Facebook, keep using Instagram. But if you're the sort of person who values your privacy, you want to take Facebook and Instagram off your machine and hope that also removes the spyware underneath.
Yeah, hopefully. It's the key word there.
Yeah, and so that's really what we're talking about. You know, if you're using Facebook actively, all bets are off. And I get that.
Yeah.
It's a
trade-off.
You have to understand, if you're going to use Facebook, they're going to take your thing about, oh, I biked 6 miles today,
right,
and show you ads for bikes.
They're going to show me ads for bikes. They're going to show me ads for vacations for cyclists, for different water bottles. And, oh, wouldn't you love to go get a new jersey? And, hey, you should use this chain lube. And
that's fair. That's actually fair.
Sure.
Because you actually actively posted something.
Yep. I contributed.
You contributed and they're contributing back. That's very nice. But when they put it on your phone and then they spy on where you go in your browser,
yeah,
that's beyond the pale for me. I don't like it at all. I don't like a little bit. So that's where that stands as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, if you want me to write a book on
Linux
command line, send me an email at nick@asknick.com and tell me how much you'd pay for a book.
I know you've been on the fence of whether to do a class or a book, but I think the book would be a good starting point in that, you know, if they then teach the class, they've also got the book to follow along with.
That's true. Do you know how many faculty make more money off of selling the books they write because it's required in the class?
Yeah.
They teach?
Oh, my. Don't
my
get
late,
me started.
Yeah, my late father-in-law.
That was a pet peeve of mine as an undergrad.
Yeah, my late father-in-law, Larry Lynch, wrote a criminal justice book. And, you know, he made some good money off of that because it was over at, here in Rochester. The book was used. Also Syracuse, Albany, and Buffalo.
Yep.
And it was a criminal justice one. And he'd come to town every so often because they had to do a rewrite.
Yeah.
And, you know, every 2 years it was, oh, need to rewrite it and update it.
Right. It was when they used to do that to the calculus books that it used to piss me off.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, the calculus hasn't changed since, what, the 1600s?
Okay, let me tell you what my pet peeve.
Okay.
Every year I would sit and talk to faculty, and there was one guy who was constantly complaining that he had three preps this quarter.
Okay.
What's prep? A prep is getting ready to teach a class.
Okay.
You know, setting up your class and doing everything. And I used to get really angry with him, and I would say, you teach history.
Yeah.
It's not like somebody different won the Civil War this quarter.
Yeah, how do you change that?
I teach technology. Every single class I teach is brand new every quarter.
Every quarter, yep.
And it still might be behind.
And it's still behind, so don't talk to me about it. I have three preps. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I remember my parents coming back from one of my high school open houses and talking to the history teacher, and the history teacher said, yeah, the problem with history is they're always making more of it.
Yes, if you're teaching new history,
If you're teaching current events, right?
But if you're teaching a class on the Civil War, it's pretty much set.
Yeah.
Or,
until we have time machines.
Right.
And they bring dinosaurs into the Gettysburg battle.
Oh, man, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. But until then, the Civil War doesn't change.
Yeah.
And jetpacks.
Jetpacks! And lasers.
Yeah.
Lasers.
Finally. Oh, man. That'd be great. With those wool suits.
But, yeah, no, I think definitely do the book first. And then, you know, then you can spend time with all your great free time, you know.
Well, exactly. You know,
but the book would be at least out there.
Yeah.
Until you can get the course together and with some of the other stuff, and then you can melt the two together. Because, like I say, there are so many videos out there doing Linux.
Right.
You know, and all the different flavors. And, you know, if they also have the book, you know, because a lot of them get into installing programs and, oh, well, this one won't do the, you know, this, and you need to do it this way. And, your guidebook would be a great tool for them to help get through those screens.
Well, we'll see.
When it comes to that stuff, there's so many asterisks. It's like, yes, these are the ways you do this if, and it presupposes a whole bunch of stuff.
And the permissions.
That's part of the problem. So if you're doing, here's how to use Linux, you're going to talk about the GUI. And there are 2,000 GUIs.
Yeah.
If you're talking about the command line, it's even across flavors of Linux.
Yep.
It's identical.
Yep.
You know, there are very few differences.
Yeah, born-again shell is born-again shell.
Right. So as long as you have that, so there's one or two that use Z-shell, so I would have to say in the intro, if you have X, don't use this book. But for everybody else on the planet, the born-again shell is the born-again shell. Bash is bash.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of when I was a kid and home computers were starting to become a thing, and you had Atari that had their own home computer, you had Commodore that had their own home computer, you had Texas Instruments had their own stuff, Tandy at Radio Shack had their own stuff, and the basic interpreters that were on those were mostly the same.
Yep.
But there were differences certain commands that I can still remember, for those of us of a certain age, who were into Sesame Street and the Sesame Workshop and a show called 321 Contact that was on
PBS. Oh, yeah.
There was a magazine that I'm sure either my parents or some relative, again, this was the early 80s, a million years ago now. But I was really excited to read and learn things. You know, information didn't flow quite as quickly and seamlessly as it does today. Back then, if you wanted to learn something new, you'd have to go to some piece of media. And either that was a newspaper or a magazine or a television show or a book that you might get out of the library, and those were always 3 years out of date.
Yeah, well, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And when you're only, you know, single digits years old, that's a large portion of your life.
But I can almost guarantee you the past two generations don't know what a command line is.
No, they might
because
not.
Because they haven't gone into it like we used to do in, you know, the editing and making our own auto exec files and everything else.
Adlin, baby.
Adlin. A lot of folks don't know that because they've had Windows or they've had the Mac with the GUI interface.
Sure.
So as far as getting down into giving commands and typing commands to get into this directory and then to list the files and then how to make the files either read-write or read-only, I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do at just simple letters that you have full control over once you're in the command line and have the access, the power, the sudo privileges to do all that.
So 321 Contact Magazine used to have different sections to say, if you have an Apple computer, make sure you write this code. And if you have a Commodore, make sure you write this code. And they would break it out. And that was what was necessary at the time. Otherwise, you're going to have a bunch of kids that are all kind of grumpy at this fun animation or game or other thing that I was going to type in that I spent however many hours, because nobody knew how to touch type when they were 8 years old.
Right.
So we were carefully following along, and you know, you'd start after school and maybe you might have to take a break for dinner, and then maybe before bedtime you might be finished, and if you're lucky you'd save it to your tape drive. And
And if you're real lucky,
it would run twice.
You could read it back the next day and not have to type it in. Yeah. But yes, so it was always trying to figure those things out. But think about this. What if you made very small, digestible lessons and then...
Well, that's my thought.
And then you make like a... This word is too strong for what I'm proposing, but I was going to say certification.
Right.
Like, you are Ask Nick approved for level one of command line basics.
That makes sense.
In that one, you learn the first six commands, and then in the next one, you learn the next five commands.
Modules.
Yeah.
That way you can dip in and dip out, and you can level up as you go.
Well, gamification of learning is huge.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. You've given me things to think about.
That's what we do here.
I just have to do the work.
Yeah, well, it's not like it's new to you. You've done a number of other books.
Well, exactly. And
it's just fine. Yeah. Your biggest problem?
Time.
Finding the time.
The market I would hit is
enough use Unix for a resume.
Ooh.
For like recent grads.
Ooh. Something like that. I like it.
Or people changing majors or people changing
industries. Yeah, makes sense. All right. Well, this music tells us that we are done with the first hour of this. Some would say wasted the first hour of this show. I don't think we did. I think we talked about cacti and we talked about publishing and we actually had a computer question, so that was a shocker. If you would like us to get back on track, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or to get us farther off track. At this point, I don't think we care. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 59 minutes after the hour. Sound bites. We will see you in just a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And it's 3 minutes after
there
the
we
hour.
Go.
We're going to be, we're back. Look, we've been talking during the break, and my brain is going about 100 miles a minute.
We've stimulated
my brain,
stimulated,
which doesn't happen often enough.
Now he's got lots of great ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I've got ideas.
Okay. He's got.
We'll see if they're great.
Just got to get rid of the bad ones, and we'll be all set.
Right. All right. And it looks like the phones are working again, so we're back, and we're going to talk to Jack from Rochester, New York. What's up, Jack?
I've got a couple of old PCs hooked up to some television sets. They're not smart TVs. So I use the PCs just basically to stream movies and TV shows on those television sets. So they've got Windows 10, and it doesn't meet the requirements for Windows 10. But I've read one of the things you could do is put a version of Chrome on there or do Linux. And I'm wondering what you think about either of those ideas. And which would be better, the kind of Chrome route or the Linux route?
Either is fine,
yeah.
Actually. It depends on what you stream. So there are almost everything can be streamed through either. There are a couple that don't work super well, some of the more obscure ones. You can generally find, for example, let's say you go the Chrome OS route, and you either buy a Chromebook or you put Chrome OS Flex on your old machine, and you use that. If you buy a Chromebook, you can run the Android version of apps, so you can run the Netflix Android app. And you can run the Amazon Prime Netflix app, and those will work perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just Chrome OS Flex or Linux, which is really the same thing, Chrome OS Flex is just the Chrome OS front end on top of, guess what, Linux. So either one of those will let you run them through the browser. And you can hook them right to your TV, and either one of those would work perfectly fine.
I'm fine just running it right through the browser.
Yeah,
then someone like myself, whose computer literacy is super low, which would be easier for me to kind of work with, the Chrome or the Linux?
I believe installing Linux would be easier.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've done that, you can use, whether it's Firefox or Chrome, I don't care, a browser. Once you've done that, you can put a link to the browser. It'll be right in the menu. There's just like Windows has a menu,
mm-hmm,
that you can pick programs from, every Linux has a menu you can pick programs from, and it'll be in there.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, with most of them, you can say right-click and put a link on the desktop. And then right on the desktop will be a link to your browser. You double-click on it, you're in.
For what I would be using it for, what version of Linux would you recommend?
If you're going to use Linux, probably Linux Mint would be the easiest for most people coming from Windows at this point.
Because it looks a lot like Windows, and
right,
it behaves a lot like Windows. So the things that your mouse-clicking finger already knows how to do will transition more smoothly to that unit.
Right.
Are there any minimum hardware requirements for using the Linux Mint?
Yes. Hold on a second.
We're looking those up right now.
One of the other advantages of Linux is you can, while Nick looks this up, if you've got a flash drive, you can lower the ISO onto the flash drive, have it boot from that flash drive, and test drive it before you even install it onto your machine.
Right. So the minimum requirements, and again, as with every single minimum requirement, it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but the minimum requirement is 2 gigs of RAM and 20 gigs of disk space.
I got that, certainly.
Yeah.
And
very likely.
Yeah, and the display resolution of at least 1024 by 768,
yeah.
Which, again, yeah. Better yet, 4 gig of RAM, 100 gig of disk space. A 64-bit processor is better than a 32-gig 32-bit processor.
So pretty much any machine made in the last 10 years for certain.
Yeah.
And probably more than that.
Okay, good. Good. Okay, I'll give that a try. And as you said, I could load it onto the flash drive and just do a test drive and see how it works with the machine and see how comfortable I am with the GUI. That's
exactly right.
Yeah.
That is exactly correct.
It will run a little slower, though, like you've always pointed out to people.
It will run slow because Linux Mint is compressed on the thumb drive. So every time you load or save something, it has to decompress it or recompress it, which over a thumb drive speed is slow.
Mm-hmm.
But running it will be the right speed. Once it's loaded into memory, it will run fast.
Yeah. Is there a particular site you go to download Linux that you know it's a secure site to get it from?
Yes. Linux Mint. Hold on. LinuxMint.com actually is the place. LinuxMint.com, all one word, obviously.
Great.
And the current version is 22.1, and it's a very good operating system. And as Dennis said, it adheres closely to the graphical ethos of Windows, so you will be quite familiar with how it works.
Would a security software like I have Bitdefender, would that operate with Linux or not?
No, and you don't need it. You could run. There is an antivirus program called ClamAV, which you can load. It's again, as with any operating system, there's a software center or software
repository
that has literally tens of thousands of programs you can run, and you can go in there and type in antivirus, and it will bring up an antivirus program, and the one that is most used under Linux is ClamAV.
Well, I'd be exclusively, basically, just streaming from a couple of sites. I wouldn't really be browsing the internet, so I don't even know if I have a need for
it. It can't hurt, but it isn't necessary.
Yeah. Well, this sounds like a great solution. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, let us know how you make out with that.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks. Bye bye. Yeah. There are like you said in the last segment, there are tens of thousands of Linuxes that are available, and they all are slightly different front ends, although the back ends are almost identical on all of them. If you're looking for something that essentially mimics Windows, as Dennis said, it doesn't mimic it, but it uses the same...
behaves the similarly.
...language.
Yeah.
The same graphical display language. That Windows, you will try to be careful and not get them sued. display language that Windows uses, Linux Mint is about the closest. If you are comfortable in Windows, you will be comfortable in Linux Mint.
Yeah.
So
no, it's a safe
place
to start.
That's a fair way to say that.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if your machine is too old to run Windows 11, then you know that can be a reasonable alternative.
Right. And there are Linuxes for dang near every level of operating system. So I've seen very low end machines with 2 gig of RAM or even 1 gig of RAM. What do you put on them? Puppy Linux,
mm-hmm.
Okay, and it will run just great. on those older machines. So there's a level for everybody, and everybody for a level. All right, our next caller is Ralph. Ralph, where are you calling from?
Hey, guys, this is Josh. Sorry.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Santa Cruz, California, formerly Fairport. But just wanted to call. I'm listening to you guys. As always, you guys sound wonderful.
Thank you.
Highly entertaining.
Thanks, Josh.
And even though I'm here in California, in my mind, I'm driving through, you know, Webster or something like that.
Yeah.
listening to you guys on the radio.
Cool, cool.
And, I just wanted to call and say hello. That's basically all.
I'm glad you did, Josh. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, in the summer, you come visit us. In the winter, we'll come visit you.
That sounds good.
Sounds like a plan.
Now, is there a place to get a garbage plate out there?
Well, no, unfortunately, but there is a Hawaiian restaurant that sells something they call Loco Moco, which
okay.
is a burger, fried egg, rice, and macaroni salad, and that's the closest I
It's not bad, Loco Moco. All right,
it's a West Coast style. All right.
What's good that? To know.
It's a West Coast yeah. style.
Exactly right. Right. And Josh, your job, of course, is to get everybody in Santa Cruz listening to this show.
Oh, yeah, I talk about you guys all the time.
That's what I like to hear. Thanks, Josh.
All right, thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling. Have fun.
Yeah, thanks. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
So we just got a text message in.
Oh.
And I was asked, is multi-factor authentication a good thing?
Okay, hold on. No, it is a necessary thing.
It is way past
good.
Yeah, no, this is what you want.
Okay.
So in the olden days, you'd have an account, you'd have a password with it, and people are humans, right? And humans have flaws. And one of the flaws that lots of people have is that they use the same password for different accounts, different websites, different sites that they use to buy things, their bank accounts, other places. So companies started saying, well, we want you to be secure, and longer and more complex passwords are easier harder for the bad guys to guess. So we recommend doing something like that. And what happened was computers got a lot faster and data breaches started happening. And people started learning, oh, if the person in this data breach who had this email address, oh, in this other data breach they have the same email address but for this other website. Okay, well, let's compare the two passwords. Oh, they're the same one.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder if they also shop at this other website. I'll put in their email address and I'll try that password.
Or their
bank. Oh, look,
bank.
I'm in.
Or
their bank. Or the power company or whoever.
Right. And again, to back up, MFA, multi-factor authentication, is more than one way to authenticate you. That's why, like, you get a text message that says put in this code or that sort
yeah.
of thing. That's multi-factor authentication.
Right. So one of the ways they can do that is by contacting you, what I call an out-of-band communication. So you've got the main way that you're talking to this company, like through their website, but they have a different way to contact you. And it's something that the bad guys wouldn't necessarily have, and that might be
right.
your cell phone. And they can send you a text message that says, hey, your code is 52438. And you enter that in, and then they say, okay, this is much more likely to be
you.
The actual you and not the guy pretending to be you.
Or a lot of people are using authenticators now.
Yes.
Google has one. Microsoft has had one.
Right.
Still has one. Facebook has their own. I wouldn't use it on a dare.
Right. So 20 years ago, these companies would send you a little fob that would have a LCD
right.
panel. It would look like a digital watch, and it would have a set of numbers on it that would change every 60 seconds, 30 seconds, whatever. And you would log in by putting in your password, and then you would append the digits there. And because those changed on a regular basis, and because the other company knew, and usually this was financial folks
yep.
that were handing these out. I got mine from PayPal a million years ago. They would know which one they sent you, and they would know what those numbers were today and what they were going to be in the future. And as long as you entered something that they were expecting, then they'd let you in.
Right.
And that was a good way to do it. The problem was the chipset on those fobs got reverse engineered, and they figured out the algorithm that it was using to generate those numbers. So they moved on to something else. So these days they don't do it with a standalone fob. They do it with an app that's generally on your smartphone.
And can be changed at the back end when it needs to.
Right, and can be updated, unlike a circuit board that they've mailed to you in the physical
And I cannot
mail.
Tell you how many times I've gone to enter a number and it changes just as I'm about to enter the last yeah. number.
So the good ones, the ones that I like, and I was showing my son about this earlier this week, have a little pie chart or a little countdown timer. And
the
little piece of pie gets smaller and smaller and smaller as it's about to advance to the next value. And so that's the current way that a lot of places will do that. Other places will have a similar app that when you try and log in, it will send a push message to your phone.
Right.
And then the app pops up with a big red button if it wasn't you or a big green button if it was you. And you press the green button and then the website lets you in.
Or what Google sometimes does is send you pick the picture you see on the screen.
Yes.
So that's another way to do multi-factor authentication.
Yes. They
And that you get that on your cell phone, and it shows you like three pictures, one of which is the one on your screen. You click on that, you're in.
Right. The lots and lots of device manufacturers are also using biometrics. So they are measuring something about you, the authentic you,
right.
whether that's a fingerprint or the shape of your face
right.
or... some other in ye olden days, you'd go watch all those fancy action movies, and they'd always have an iris scan where you had to lean into the vault and go to the access pad, and you'd have to lean in, and it would scan your eyes.
Every movie, yeah.
And I imagine that's still being done in some places. But the point is, these are all multiple factors. And any one of them might not be enough to prove that you are you, but the combination of all of them narrows down the likelihood
right.
that it is you.
Right.
And the more of those you can throw at your situation, and the higher security or higher value the thing is you're trying to protect, the more of those you might want to use.
And a lot of them also use your IP address. I've been on many sites that say, all right, I get that you're using a new browser,
right.
so now we have to reprove you. But, or you're coming from a new site, so we need to reprove you. But they will say, okay, so I'm going to this site. This is the IP address I always use. This is the browser I always use. So we just need to send a code to his phone, because now we've got three ways to say this is probably him.
Right.
And that's multi-factor authentication. Only one of which I had to deal with, but there were three.
So the challenge is, and the cost is, it's a lot less convenient, right?
Yep.
It sure is less convenient than just saying, yeah, this is me, this is my username, this is my password, let me in. But
I've had my credit card stolen. I can handle a little bit of inconvenience.
Yeah.
Believe me, there's nothing more inconvenient than having your identity stolen or your credit card stolen.
Right.
Or any of that other stuff. So a little bit of tiny amount of inconvenience. You don't like it, cry me a river.
No,
I'm sorry.
It's
That's
true.
Just the way it is.
The way that my computer and my phone are protecting my other passwords is really helpful. And right now I've got those set by my fingerprint on my laptop. So it says, you know, if you're trying to log in here and you want us to supply the password for you, we'll do it. Just let us know that you're you.
Yep.
And I say, okay. And
all right, we got to get to the phones. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That's good, but we got to get to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Oh, you know, nothing good.
Well, clearly not.
Yeah. Hey, I've been hunting around. You know, I get great joy in defeating Microsoft and their evil plans. And I see that there is a hack out there that will allow you to install Windows 11. It's something to do with program to install or put the ISO on a thumb drive. I can't remember the name of the program that does it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it pre-sets the registry, I believe.
Yeah, there's a couple settings in the registry. It's got to reset.
And those will work until they don't.
Yep.
Because one of the things that Microsoft is actively, there have been five or six, maybe eight hacks like that already, most of which have been killed. Microsoft does what they can do to kill those hacks. So they will work until they don't. So we don't recommend that people do them. I mean, certainly you can, but when they stop working, don't call us.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry, but that's just just the way it is.
Because they're going into the registry and making the changes. We will not recommend anybody go into the registry and muck around there and making changes because you could brick your machine.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So that points me in my other direction, which is my final switch over to Linux. I'm using Carbonite Online Backup, and when I go to switch over to Linux, I'm wondering is Carbonite going to be able to actually see the way my files are laid out and put them properly in the Linux file system?
I think not.
Yeah.
But you may have to restore, for instance, your documents into your Linux Mint documents folder. You may have to restore your desktop icons back to your desktop. You can do it kind of manually, but I wouldn't imagine that Carbonite will help you do that transition from one machine to another.
Yeah, right now, Carbonite only supports Windows and the Mac.
Okay. Can you get your stuff back if you go to their website?
They do have a backup and disaster recovery solutions for Linux servers.
Okay.
Those cost you an exceptionally decent amount of money.
So, if he's just doing a restoration, could he log into their website, pick from the most recent backup, and pull it down? They only do it through their clients?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Now
I'm learning things.
That's good. There's none. So there are no products and no platforms for Carbonite. Not Basic, Plus, Prime, none of them. So what you would want to do is make a couple of backups, either straight to a big thumb drive or an external hard drive that you plug in.
Yeah. And maybe I should just switch to Linux or to NPass.
And certainly if what you're backing up are your passwords, then yes, NPass works on both Linux and Windows.
Okay. So my final comment to the whole computing world and the people that create software and all the trouble, please stop helping me. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right, thanks. No, there are times that we're sitting around and the features are there to attempt to help you, and they more than often tend
help
to get in the
get
way.
Get in my way.
Yeah.
Right. Or they're making assumptions about what they believe the situation is.
More hindrance.
But they were developed thousands of miles away, and they've never met me.
Yep.
And maybe it's my fault. Maybe my situations just aren't usual enough.
Unique?
Yeah, I don't fall into the big meaty part of that curve.
Yeah, right. Andy couldn't get in, and he's now in. Bruce said very good advice. Carl Icahn, very clever, Carl. Very clever. He spells it Icahn like a computer Icahn. Linux Mint doesn't include Chromium web browser anymore, just Firefox. True, you can load Chromium. It doesn't come pre-installed, but Firefox does. But as I said, there are 50 different web browsers. The one that starts with a V, Vivaldi.
I haven't heard that one in a while.
Is another one. And there's a bunch of them. And I found one that, and Brave and others. And I found one that I use only for
Facebook.
Yeah. And therefore, even if it bypasses the Facebook fence and puts a tracking cookie on my system.
Yeah, there's not going to be a lot to find.
There's not going to be anything else to find.
Yeah, it's,
you're going to be a very boring person to them.
Well, that's exactly right.
Hopefully.
That's exactly right. You can't. And that's the other beauty of Linux. It is so easy. Like I said, there's quite literally tens of thousands of programs in your repository or your software data bank or whatever they call it on your machine.
Right.
Software center. There are literally tens of thousands of programs. So if you type in web browser, you're going to get 20 of them. Which one do you pick? I get it. You end up with analysis paralysis. You've got 20 of them you're looking at. Which one to use?
Yeah.
The answer? Doesn't matter. Whatever makes you happy.
They usually got star ratings or other things next to them in those repositories,
they all have star
right?
ratings,
or like how many different installations have been done.
Right.
Requests.
Right. So that helps. But
you can at least see what's popular.
They're all free. So you can use one and decide you don't like it and move on to another one and do what you want. It's Linux. You're not locked into anything, and you don't have to pay for anything. There's just a bunch of really cool free stuff under Linux. I get so annoyed when I'm helping somebody with their computer and they say, oh, I have to pay for this. What?
Yeah.
Oh, right. You're running Linux, right? No, I'm sorry. No. No. I believe in free. Free as in freedom and free as in beer. It's both free to use and free to own. So I prefer that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. But we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. What will we talk about next? It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go too far away, because we're not gonna. We'll just be right back.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm still Dennis Worster.
It's unbelievable that you have remained Dennis Worster through this entire show.
It turns out it's been working really well for me, so I'm just leaning
in. Going with it.
Stick with it, man.
Yeah.
Till I get a better offer.
Do what works.
Absolutely. Stick with it. All right. And now?
More news.
Well, do I want Google News or miscellaneous news?
Well, wait. I have a question first.
Oh, question first.
All right. We've been doing a lot of cleaning where I work.
Okay.
We've been hitting all the back offices, all the basement hidden piles of old technology.
I love those. Those are my favorites.
Fun.
You didn't invite me?
I didn't know.
Okay.
We pulled out 5 different laundry tub bins of, like pretend you were trying to escape from prison.
Yeah.
Right? You know the laundry bins I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
They're on wheels that are pushing them around.
I love those.
You
put his body in and dump it in the chute.
Right, and then you put all the towels on top
so they don't know it's in there.
So we had e-waste, gave us a bunch of those bins. We cleaned out a room and used 5 of those, just empty out shelves of stuff. Anyway, in an entirely different thing that we did a couple weeks after, I discovered that there was a very small, very cute CRT TV. And it had an RCA input on the back. And I said, oh, this is awesome, because the people who are coming to work for me now have rarely ever seen a CRT TV.
Yep.
And this gives me opportunities that I might not otherwise have to make use of things that are in my own basement and to show them things that are kind of cool and would be an interesting conversation starter and things to play with. So one of the things from my basement that I have is an original Raspberry Pi that has an RCA video out.
Nicer!
So now I'm trying... My question is, gentlemen, what should I tell that Raspberry Pi to do to put out on the TV that would be interesting? I have an idea, but I want to hear your ideas first.
Okay, my initial idea is a weather station.
You read my mind. Okay, go ahead.
I have one set up on my system.
Okay.
I've got my Pi 3 with a 7-inch screen. Really should be an 11-inch screen these days because it's far away for a 7-inch
screen. Sell me your 7.
Yeah.
And you can upgrade.
Yeah. I've got the temperature in both Fahrenheit and Celsius.
Okay.
I've got the date and time.
This is our local weather.
Local weather.
Okay.
I've got the conditions. So, you know, mostly cloudy and
yes.
wind at such and so and thingy thing, whatever it is.
Right.
And the next 3 days.
Okay.
And all of that is free. You can download 3 days for free.
Okay.
So that's why I don't have 5 days anymore. and it just sits there and gives me the time and the temperature. And the time updates, obviously, every minute, and the temperature updates every 10 minutes.
Right.
The whole weather thing updates every 10 minutes.
Okay.
And it just sits there and works.
Okay. Dave, any ideas from you?
Hold on a minute. I'll show it. I can pull it up on the screen.
Oh, you want... Okay, it's not a tell, it's a show.
Yeah. No, this is a program that I use on one of my computers.
Okay.
For ham radio.
All right.
And basically, you know, it'll show you points, but you can also, with it, track the weather... The times, all that stuff. But it also does satellite tracking.
Okay. So you can tell what satellites are, where they are and what's visible.
You can look up and tell you exactly what the positions of them and everything else.
I always liked that. There was an app or a notification at one point where my phone would buzz and would say, oh, go outside and look over here because that's the International Space Station that's making a transit across the sky.
You can track them all and you can see their patterns. And you can list the ones that you want. And that type of stuff.
So thank you for that. The one that I learned about within the last couple of weeks was there was this guy who I don't know if it was through an auction or through some other cast-off equipment managed to get one of the video generators that was used by the Weather Channel and reverse engineered it, took video feeds and weather feeds in, and essentially recreated the old 1980s cable Weather Channel thing.
No!
With the music.
And the music? Oh, no.
So I'm trying to... And it's a web page that you can... I'll show it to you after the show.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, if there was a way that I could make a Raspberry Pi go fetch that web page and stream the music...
Clearly.
And push it to the TV to like
yes,
just bring,
you can.
Bring certain amount of the 80s into the 21st century.
When I'm writing my news every week,
I thought that would be kind of neat.
A while, I let my Raspberry Pi play me music.
Okay.
In the background. So Raspberry Pis will do that.
All right.
Well, I use a program called Pithos, which talks to my, what's the site that plays music?
Spotify?
No, the other one. Pandora. Mm-hmm.
Pandora.
I couldn't think of it because my mind got locked on Pithos is the name of the jar that Pandora used that all the sins and hopes and stuff were in.
Okay.
It's the Greek name for that. Sorry. And I just got stuck on Pithos. Couldn't think of Pandora.
The one that I brought up for you is called a Geochron clock.
Oh, my heavens on earth.
So I'm showing this.
I need that.
If you go any web browser, weatherstar.netbymatt, Matt with two T's, .com, it gives you information in the form of the Weather Channel as it existed in the 80s and 90s.
Weatherstar by Matt?
Weatherstar.netbymatt.com.
Yeah, because those would be very interesting because, you know, they're constantly changing.
And you can pick at the bottom which things you want to appear on the screen. So my idea was that I'd get a Pi to load this page and put that up.
Yes, you can do that. You can do that quite easily.
I'm doing it now on a Pi.
Holy mother of pearl, look at this thing. It really is the 80s.
Yeah.
All
Isn't
over
it great?
Again. Oh, I'm in love now.
I thought you'd like this. So this is why I wanted to talk about the basement and cleaning out and finding an old TV and what do I put on it. This is my idea.
It's got the map. It's a map. I love
this. It shows you the gray line?
I love this.
Oh, okay. Oh, the little forecast and all
it's
that.
It's all there.
Oh, cool.
Just as a bit of kitsch.
Yeah.
So I was going to do that, and then I was going to have a Switch box and bring in my GameCube, Nintendo's GameCube from 20 years ago.
And it's showing the different weather patterns, you know, the outlook for the next 3 days.
No, it's very authentic.
Yeah.
It's like a little time machine, a nostalgia for...
Well, see, that's what I...
Right.
Again, I used to track the gray lines and everything else, and it'll do the weather. It'll tell you if storms are coming through because that can affect, you know, in ham radio, how you get out and everything else. And,
right.
Oh, that's, I'm sorry, but you need to go to this.
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, and you can put in your local location, and it will give you the radar animation. And anyway.
Cool.
For those of us that might have remembered the Weather Channel from years ago.
Yep, yep. All right.
It's pretty cool stuff.
That's great.
So, yeah, if you didn't learn anything else today.
Oh, right. We have Bill. I forgot this.
We should probably talk to Bill.
We were so excited. I missed Bill. Bill from Greece, New York.
That's
all
right. There's still time. There's still time. We can do it.
Sorry, Bill.
Yeah, I've got a locally built computer.
Okay.
With two hard drives. One for Windows 11 has got the operating system, and the second hard drive has all my data.
Okay.
And I wanted to use Microsoft Photos because it'll do a slideshow in an MP4 format. But
right.
When I open up Photos on the drive that has the software, it doesn't see any of the data on the other drive. It can't find any of my photos. And I just wonder if you knew a fix for that.
I'm going to make an educated guess that Photos app is probably looking into your Photos folder, and your Photos folder is probably on the same drive that your operating system is on, unless you've already told your computer to store your home folder, your profile, on that auxiliary drive.
Well, that's what they did when they built the computer. They put all the data on the second hard drive.
Okay. So what I would do, and again, I'm making an educated guess here, I would make a shortcut
to that folder,
to the Photos folder on the secondary drive, and I would put that shortcut in your home folder on the primary drive, and I would, in the Photos app, I would see if there's a way to...
There's a better way to do that.
Oh, there is? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's hear it.
So what you want to do is... in File Explorer, click on the Pictures folder that is on the C drive and select Properties. You with me?
Yep. Yep.
Select the Location tab. There'll be a dialog box. Select the Location tab and select Move. Then go find the new Pictures folder on the D drive and select that one. You will get a dialog box that asks you if you want to merge the folders. Say yes.
Oh, okay, merge.
And then you wait until they merge. Now, it
might take some time.
Assuming you don't have any pictures in the C drive, then it shouldn't take much time. But they should merge. And from then on, it should be that Microsoft Photos will now look to the D drive.
Okay, thank you. I'll try that. You guys are the best.
That's the theory anyway. Good luck.
Thanks for calling, Bill.
Yeah, we love theories.
Exactly.
There's so many of them.
we have plenty of theories, believe me.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, it's
Kevin.
Of course, Bill, you should have backups.
Yeah.
Before you do any of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Only.
Always have backups. Have many backups.
Only back up the data you want to keep.
Right. So if you want to keep your photos, just in case, because it's Microsoft, anything can happen. Make sure you have backups before you do this. We're not playing around. Have backups. All right. I have too many tabs open now. This is your people's fault.
Uh-oh.
All right. You're making me work today.
What do
our next caller is Kevin from Greece, New York. What's up, Kevin?
Hi, I just wanted to talk about my Android phones. I don't know if anybody else has had this problem, but our Android phones updated from version 14 to 15 this week. And among the other annoyances and changing icons and moving things around was the power off menu with the side button, you know, the three buttons.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they changed it to digital assistant.
Yes, they did.
So you can fix this by going into the settings and looking for your advanced features side button, and then you can change it back to power off menu. But, you know, we've got to the end of the day, and, oh, okay, fine, we got this new update that installed, and things are moved around, and we try to turn the phones off, and, hello, can I help you? No. So I just wanted to make sure anybody else having that problem out there, because I don't know when Android does these updates, but ours happened in the middle of the day this week. So.
Right, and there are two places you can find all that stuff. The Quick Settings panel, which is the when you do a drop down,
right?
Yeah, it's in there. Somewhere, and it depends on how your system is set up. I can't.
Oh, because there's a power. There could be a power off button in the drop down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Oh no, I see where it is. Yeah. Right. Okay. You could go to there.
There you go. The other places.
The menu. Yeah, I see. Oh, and then side button settings appears below that too. Sure.
Right. Right. And also, if you long press the power button, again, I'm not sure that works on Galaxies.
Yeah, it's the Galaxy. Yeah.
I'm not sure it works on Galaxies, but it certainly doesn't hurt to try. Something will happen.
Right, right. There's long press and there's double press. Yeah, so there's, you know, a couple other choices you get on that side button when you go into that menu. So you can set things up the way you want it. But I just wanted to let people know.
Appreciate that. Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yep, bye-bye. Yeah, the fact is that there's always... And I mean always, changes that are made when you upgrade something like that. And in this particular case, it was a dumb thing, I think, that they did,
mm-hmm.
quite honestly. But that's, I suppose, neither here nor there. I can't lie. I don't like it. But it is what it is. They're, you know... They want you using the AI more than they want you using the power button. So, and who turns off their phone anymore anyway? So, is their thought. I understand we all turn off our phones regularly,
right?
But Google has a different understanding of that. I'm loving this page, by the way. This
it's really something, isn't it?
Star page, weather star.
So there's a GitHub project where you can download the source code if you want to run it on your local machine, or you can just visit their page where they've got it.
I should probably put that on the...
So I'm checking to see if it's something that will run on a Pi, and I found a couple of other people that have tried it. They're not having very much luck yet. But I'm also looking at other Raspberry Pi weather station kinds of things to see how far back into the Pi universe they'll run. The only reason I think of this is because of that RCA connection on the back of the TV, and I recalled that one of the original Pis had an RCA video out, and I thought if I could marry those two together, then maybe I could do something moderately interesting with the power of the Pi.
Soundbite, your name?
But we're...
Martin, where are you calling from?
Playing with ideas. If you have an idea of what I should show on an old TV to enhance my nerd credit work, I'm all ears.
80s style. I'm trying to add this to the thing, so keep talking.
Yeah. it's a interesting collection of pages. So apparently it's a software interpretation of the data that you can get. The weather data is available from NOAA and is available from other sources too. But you can display it in kind of a cute, kitschy way using this tool.
All right. Our next caller is Martin from Greece, New York. What's up, Martin?
So I'm an occasional listener, and I'm not sure if this has been addressed before, but I have always shared folders with my husband using OneDrive.
Okay.
And a number of months ago, it stopped working. So I resent him the link. We both use OpenOffice instead of the other products.
Okay.
And suddenly, when he gets the file, it is read-only only, and it's only read-only in Microsoft format. And I've tried the same thing with my drive on the other system, and I get a very similar response. And I've done a number of web searches trying to figure out if this is common or I'm doing something wrong, and I see no solutions anywhere.
So I think there's a couple of different things happening. One is you're saving things, and they're only opening or only available in Word format, you said?
So we use OpenOffice, but we usually save everything in Microsoft format.
Okay, sorry. So that's expected.
I just save it in Microsoft format. So if we have to send a file to another person, they can open it and read it.
And the second challenge you mentioned was that you are saving files, and when your husband tries to view them, they're available only as read-only. So they can see the contents, but they can't make any changes, and they can't commit those changes back to OneDrive.
And it, exactly.
From what I understand, you'd prefer it if that person was able to open them and change them and commit the changes back so that you can work on collaborating.
We've been doing that for years.
Okay.
And suddenly, a number of months ago, that stopped working.
Okay. Two things it could be. Well, many things it could be. Nobody expects a Spanish acquisition. But the two main things it could be is either you've reached your sharing limits. There is a limit to the number of things you can share, or Microsoft needs to validate your account because they don't know you anymore.
Or does it do read-only by default?
Or it's in your personal vault and not in your shared vault.
Okay.
So mine, for some reason, I've done the share with, and he gets a link, opens it, and it still doesn't work. I look at the folder. I'm online right now, and it is in my personal vault, and I'm not sure how to put this in a non-personal vault so he can get it because the descriptions don't seem to – I follow it along, and it's not clear to me.
Well, you just move it to any folder that's not in your personal vault. So at the same level that your personal vault is before you double-click on that to open it, you create...
So if I'm in OneDrive
and
it shows my personal vault and I go up from there, the next one is desktop.
Yes, and you should be able to create a new folder there.
And share that with him?
And share that one.
Okay.
Yeah, Microsoft changed. If it's in your personal vault, it's personal. If it's not in your personal vault, it's public. It can be made public.
Okay.
So you need to put it in the not personal vault, whatever you care to call that.
Right.
And once it's there, then you can share that. And I believe you could just share the whole folder.
The whole folder, right.
I believe so. So anything you put in there, your husband will be able to see and interact with. And anything in your personal vault is yours personally.
Okay. I will try that and see what happens.
Let us know. And stop listening sporadically and listen every week. What is wrong with you, Martin?
Well, because I have lunch with my siblings regularly, and we eat lunch until... one, and then I listen to you on the way home.
Perfectly understandable. Family comes first.
Yes. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
All right. Have fun. All bye-bye. Right.
Thanks for calling.
Right, yeah. Microsoft has changed the way some things work. They do that regularly because they want to keep you on your toes. And so I can't think of another reason to do that. That must be the only reason. And so, yeah, you need to be aware that things change. And there's nothing we can do about that other than explain to you how they changed and why they changed.
Right.
And get you to see that they...
That's what happens when you aren't the person creating the product. You know, if it was your own thing and you wrote all the code and made all the circuits, then you could do it yourself. But now that we are in a consumer electronics culture,
yep,
we aren't the people making the choices necessarily.
I'm sorry, I am mesmerized by this weather star thing.
This is my superpower. I can stun Nick Francesco. How do I do that? By showing him shiny, fun tech things.
Shiny, shiny, shiny. I love this. You know, I'm a kid of this generation. I watched a lot of weather on exactly this screen.
Right.
I'm very impressed by this.
And I think it would be more fun to watch when the weather gets more interesting, you know, when the blizzard comes.
Right. No, thank you. Well, watching it from inside, yeah.
So I found some YouTube channels that have old music from the Weather Channel, so you can play them along with it and you get the full experience.
Send those to me as well, please.
I will.
All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Dennis Worcester, who took time out from his Saturday to present us with his wisdom and his knowledge and his cool, shiny things. I want to thank Steve Ray for not coming in at all. I will insult him every week, whether he's here or not. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show. Look at the graphic. The longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you, because with your support, we are member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?